and then past section. This universe with all its planets is most unfortunate. And even more unfortunate are the members of the Yadu dynasty, because they could not identify Lord Hari as the personality of Godhead any more than the fish could identify the moon. Okay. So we were listening to Maharaj's class yesterday, and of course it's the same pretty much theme that Vidura is being informed about the situation. It describes he already kind of knew this or something, you know. But this is, of course, a very well-known psychological fact that any trauma, people have to relive it again and again. They have to talk about it again and again. And many things, because you see that just jnana, or mental understanding of things, logical understanding, you know, is not sufficient. It's not sufficient just to see something, you know. It's not sufficient just to understand it logically for the Atma. You know, the Atma has this ability to engage in dhyana, in bhava, in meditation. And so it needs that. It has to be nourished at that level. You know? And so then Vidura, even if he's heard these things before, he wants to hear them from different perspective. He wants to, you know, take them into his life view, you know, his basis like that. And so then he's, of course, experiencing personal separation. And then Uddhava is explaining that everybody is suffering. And here he's going on talking then more, even more specifically about the Yadu dynasty. That Vidura shouldn't be upset because he comes from the Kuru dynasty, but even worse than them, you know, is the Yadu dynasty. In Prabhupada's purport, slide number 4-5, Prabhupada says, Uddhava lamented for the unfortunate persons of the world, now we have loka as world here, huh? Not universe, who could not recognize Lord Sri Krishna in spite of seeing all his transcendental godly qualities. From the very beginning of his appearance within the prison bars of King Kong up to his Mausala Lila, although he exhibited his potencies as the personality of Godhead in the six opulences of wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, the foolish persons of the world could not understand that he was the Supreme Lord. Like that. So this seems especially to be talking about, again, about Dwarkadish. And how much will Uddhava talk about Braja Lila? And we'll see that he talks about Krishna's pastimes in Braja and Krishna's pastimes outside of Braja. You know? And so, of course, you know, Krishna is very difficult to understand in Goloka because, you know, he's very simple and the opulences are actually these very subtle mellows of personal character qualities and love. You know, so very difficult to understand. I remember one recording, Prabhupada says that when Krishna was here, very few people understood who he was. He said, some of the Yadus and the dancers of Raja. Some of the Yadus and the dancers of Raja, they understood. Yeah. Well, we're talking even about this historically, archaeologically, and it seems that looking at it that way, there was this cult of Vasudev and Sankarshan all over the place, here and there, in Mexico, one pyramid apparently erected to them or something like that. And of course, these are the names, you know, by which Krishna and Balaram were known in Dwarka, were known in Uddhava's realm, like that. And it's there that Krishna was showing these six opulences, you know, these special opulences of wealth. Of course, you all hear beautiful descriptions of Dwarka and how it was unlimited, unrivaled. And it's, you know, orchards and chariots with golden wheels and like that and so on. And beautiful palaces with first-class transparent marble naturally inlaid with silver and growing in the veins of the marble. And the strength, of course, Krishna is defeating so many different rival princes. And he was famous everywhere. Again, even now, you know, his fame, you know, is spreading. And of course, his beauty, knowledge, renunciation. And of course, he had 16,108 beautiful, you know, princesses, beautiful in character, beautiful in abilities, beautiful in bodily features, you know, beautiful in their associates and friendships. But Krishna was detached from all of this, you know. And so people couldn't appreciate that this must be somebody special, you know, like that. So you go on here. Okay, slide number 6. Foolish persons might have thought him an extraordinary historic figure because they had no intimate touch with the Lord, like that, you know. And so the historic, this is one thing, because at that time was the end of the age of bronze. No, that, yeah, it was Dwapara Yuga. And so many people had mystical powers. The world was finer, more subtle. And so the construction of great monuments and architectural feats and uses of all kinds of geomagnetic energy and probably many kinds of energy we don't even understand now, you know, was there. And of course, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, the flowers. And so then Krishna's opulences, which would make him, like, you know, unbelievably, you know, obvious at this point of being extraordinary. Yeah, okay, then he was a historically potent person. But Arjuna also had great mystic powers. You know, he had a palace made by Maya Dhanava. You know, but with more intimate touch, and maybe then visiting Dwarka and seeing his entourage of beautiful queens and the opulences, then, oh, you know, somebody would say, well, this is exceeding Hastinapur and other places like that too. Foolish persons might have thought him, Prabhupada says, an extraordinary historic figure, because they had no intimate touch with the Lord. But the more unfortunate were the family members of the Lord, the members of the Yadu dynasty, yes, who were always in company with the Lord, but were unable to recognize him as the supreme personality of Godhead. Uddhava lamented his own fortune also, because although he knew Krishna to be the supreme personality of Godhead, he could not properly use the opportunity to render devotional service to the Lord. You know, I think everybody, you know, feels this. Like, everybody has different abilities and qualities, and some of them are, you know, manifesting from our particular karma. But ultimately, they're being motivated by the fact that each of us transcendentally is a unique person with so much potency, and the Atma has so much power, you know, potency. Remember that Prabhupada was walking on the beach in, I think it was Long Beach or something, in Southern California. And it's described as these big oil freighters coming in, or cargo container ships coming in. Of course, these things were so long, so gigantic. And maybe like there were 3 or 4 tugboats with their cables, you know, pulling the thing into its final moorage there. You know. And Prabhupada said, "This is Maya." The devotees are kind of wondering, what is that? And he said that the big boat, because its motor is turned off, the little boats can move it. But he said, if the big boat turns on its propeller and turns it over 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, 5 times, then it just breaks the ropes and goes wherever it wants to go. So he said, because the Atma now is just intoxicated, asleep, doesn't have any motivation to express itself, then it can be drugged around by, oh, got to have a cigarette, you know, got to have an ice cream cone, got to have a little bit of prestige here, you know, be recognized. But as soon as the Atma wakes up, then all these things have no control over us. You know? So Uddhava may be appreciating that all the most intimate abilities he had, you know, all the things he wanted to talk about, that he wanted to show, which other people couldn't appreciate. You know, not even your own family members can appreciate these things. But Krishna could appreciate them all. Krishna could really relish them, you know, take advantage of them, use them, put them to good effect, you know. but he was lamenting because he could not properly use the opportunity to render service to the Lord. Macquarie, then slide 7. He regretted everyone's misfortune, including his own. The pure devotee of the Lord thinks himself most unfortunate. Oh, okay. That is due to excessive love for the Lord and is one of the transcendental perceptions of viraha, the suffering of separation. I would say maybe it's more like one of the transcendental aspects of viraha. You know, we discussed that. The suffering of separation. Of course, this is a subtle topic. You know, where rasa becomes king, not just Euclidean logic here. And then the separation, the suffering in separation, the suffering in separation from realizing, you know, full service to the Lord, then becomes an impetus like that, you know. It's interesting, for example, material lamentation is not actually a mellow of devotional service, but it can act as a preservative. So if I have some feeling that I want to do something for Krishna, I really want to, you know, organize all this work and put it in a nice hierarchy and priorities and see that it's flowing well, you know. But I'm lamenting, oh, my, I'm such a rascal. I always waste my time, you know, with ice cream, chocolate chips, and whatever else, pony rides, you know. And so I haven't got time to fully do this, you know. So that kind of material lamentation about my qualities, my insufficiencies, attachments, is not a mellow of the devotional service itself, but it becomes a preservative of a desire to serve Krishna. You know? So this is some of the combination, right, of the pure devotional service. And Prabhupada's saying, right, that a pure devotee, right, pure devotee, you know, thinks himself unfortunate, you know. But that kind of unfortunate nature is very useful. It is learned from the revealed scriptures that the moon was born from the ocean of milk. So this is the other topic. And this Prabhupada's bringing up the moon here, which is a kind of a minor thing in some ways, but it's an analogy of Krishna. So we're talking about Krishna here when we're talking about the milk, about the moon, in terms of our analogical understanding. It is learned from the revealed scriptures that the moon was born from the milk ocean. There is a milk ocean in the upper planets, and there Lord Vishnu, who controls the heart of every living entity as the Supersoul, Paramatma, resides as the Kshiradakshayi Vishnu. Okay, slide number 8. Mm-hmm. Those who do not believe in the existence of the ocean of milk, which is kind of like those who do not believe in the existence of Krishna, because they have experience only of the salty water in the ocean, should know that the world is also called the Go, which means the cow. The urine of a cow is salty. Now, this is confusing to me. I never really, I guess, maybe the pH or something. You know, but maybe so. You know, I don't know. I seem never tasted milk. Cow's milk is salty. And according to Ayurvedic medicine, the cow's urine is very effective in treating patients suffering from liver problems. Such patients may not have any experience of the cow's milk because milk is never given to liver patients. But the liver patient may know that the cow has milk also, although he has never tasted it. You know, so maybe it's saying that the urine of a cow. Okay, I think it was the milk of a cow. Okay, yeah, okay. The urine of a cow is salty. Okay, so liver patients only get to associate with a cow by drinking big, you know, warm glass of urine like that, which is very effective for liver patients. So Prabhupada's giving a real strong really, really subtle, sarcastic description of material scientists here, and people like that who don't believe in an ocean of milk, and comparing them to people who only sit around drinking cow urine like that because of their disease condition. Yeah. But other people, you're saying, they can experience there is an ocean of milk and there is a Krishna. Let's go on to slide number 9. Similarly, men who have experience only of this tiny planet where the saltwater ocean exists may take information from the revealed scriptures that there is also an ocean of milk, although we have never seen it. And this is from the revealed scriptures. From this ocean of milk, the moon was born, but the fish in the milk ocean could not recognize that the moon was not another fish and was different from them. The fish took the moon to be one of them, or maybe something illuminating, but nothing more. Yeah. Okay. And number 10. The unfortunate persons who do not recognize Lord Krishna are like such fish. Well, but this is interesting because these are milk ocean fish. So we're not talking about, gross hamburger and whatever people here. We're talking about the Yadu dynasty who are like fish and who are very, very elevated souls, right? The unfortunate persons who do not recognize Lord Krishna are like such fish. They take him to be one of them, although a little extraordinary in opulence, strength, etc. So we see, mundane biographies of Lord Chaitanya and people like this. Who's the guy? George Bernard Shaw, Nobel. Shaw? Maybe it was Shaw, yeah. He can get a Nobel Prize for literature or something like that. Was it Shaw? I think it was Shaw. Okay. Anyway, he was describing Joan of Arc. And what's his name? Mark Twain. He wrote a biography of Joan of Arc. And as far as he was concerned, it was the most important and the best thing he ever did. He put it above Huckleberry Finn and Mark and Tom Sawyer. And there she comes across, this very, transcendental person. And you see also now, even now, there's also recently there were two movies about her and stuff, So, but George Bernard Shaw's idea was that Joan of Arc was just a hyper hormone active young girl who was having some kind of hallucinatory influences on her intelligence and a product of her environment and being supported by all of this, and then had some success like this and that, So they develop, so many, things that, okay, she's more a little bit more than a human being. But ultimately, the idea of appreciating Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, my God, they take him to be one of them, although a little extraordinary in opulence, strength, etc. The Bhagavad Gita confirms such foolish persons to be most unfortunate. Avajananti mam mudho manusim tanim ashritam. So that's Prabhupada's purport, And if you go to slide 11, we found we looked up fish ocean, and had an interesting, selection of pictures on the internet. But it's a nice one. I like Oriental art, Chinese, Japanese art the most. But it's a very beautiful picture of a nice fish, kind of jumping out of the water. And this appears, maybe this is more like Uddaba, this fish in the picture, because the other ones are content to stay in their water, and see the moon, coming through the water. And of course, the ripples are probably making the moon move this way and that way, and seem like it's a part of the water, like that. But this fish, he's jumping out of the water. Like that, and trying to to have some experience of what is the moon. They'll be trying to achieve the moon. His color is also contrasting too, like that be either the ocean or the moon, which is also our relationship. We're in contrast with the material nature, and we're in contrast with the moon, But our color is very real. Prabhupada makes that point that the material nature, even though temporary, is not illusory and not unreal to deal with it properly. And so the Atma, the individual Atma, from one perspective, is just as important, just as interesting as Krishna, but from perspective. Okay. So let's go on, next slide here. Okay. And number 12, then we were thinking about this in terms of the fish could not identify the moon. In terms of our own Yadu dynasty, Srila Prabhupada, you might say, of course, just put directly when Srila Prabhupada left the planet. The stories of people, I mentioned the story of Bhakti Bringa Maharaj and one boy in Delhi, in the passport office there, actually hold big office, hundreds of people, the immigration thing. And he, maybe like about 10 years ago, Maharaj was trying to renew his visa, and the boy was helping him. And he said, the reason I'm helping you is because I can see you're ISKCON devotee. And I was so confused, so unhappy, until 1 year ago I got, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami's Gita. And he pulled it out of his desk drawer and was showing him. And then it made my life so, happy and peaceful and so on. So, of course, I had to help any of his disciples, with their visa work. And the boy asked, he said, do you think if I wrote to Srila Prabhupada, he would answer me? Very, sincere. And then Maharaj realized, my God, he had to tell the fellow that he told him. He said, I'm sorry, but Prabhupada actually left the planet, back in 1978, And so then the boy was, devastated. It was like someone walking into you and shaking you and say, oh, Ramananda, I got some bad news about your wife, or someone like that. Any of us, Hanuman Swami. And it was just like that. He had a totally personal relationship with Prabhupada through his book. And it was just like he started sort of like crying and trying to control himself in the office there. People are looking, what happens? Some very bad news, So, we have our own Yadu dynasty, our own ISKCON dynasty, And we have, what do you call them, the Dvija Bandhus, people who were initiated by Prabhupada, But now they've fallen into, right now at least, into some tough habits and stuff like that. So they're friends of the Dvijas, And then what level are we appreciating Prabhupada? In India, ISKCON is now becoming a very respected, religion, movement. Radha Saomi and what else? I don't know who else is running around now, bigger movements and stuff like that, so on, And so ISKCON is becoming appreciated by that, and it's becoming like, having triple bypass heart surgery and becoming an ISKCON Life member in Delhi, or considered, prestigious, nice things, and to help build the Temple of Understanding, and so many ways to Prabhupada created an atmosphere, where people of all kinds of fish could appreciate, appreciate ISKCON. Yes, ISKCON is one of our best Indian religions and stuff. They're good, doing good missionary work all over the world. Our other societies don't do that so much. Ramakrishna, he did it, but now ISKCON has taken up the standard again, just like Ramakrishna did. So, trying to appreciate Prabhupada and his position. And, of course, it's difficult. In some ways, that would maybe even more difficult because Prabhupada is representing Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya is even... a more special avatar than Krishna in some ways, because he's giving Krishna, and so on. So to try and have a relationship with Prabhupada, myself, I feel that I'm kind of more caught in some kind of like Aishwarya Bhava and not really participating, appreciating Lord Chaitanya as a supreme deity in our society, and maybe more inclined to Krishna, you know, as a supreme deity. You know, I remember I had one dream, because my natural work, I mean, I'm just, what, I have a kind of bureaucratic abilities and organizational abilities, and, you know, my karma too, my family were all pioneers. They pioneered Arizona, Prescott, and I was born overseas. My parents were there working, you know. And so I see that everybody has their particular nature. And so approaching Prabhupada, you know, I approach him with my karma, my nature, you know, what are things I like. And so organizing systems and pioneering new, you know, new legal systems or new, what do you call it, accounting systems. This is, you know, even the reports, you know, we call it the psychological tests you take. So I can see that. So I fit into ISKCON many ways, very naturally. It was helping Swarup Damodar with his work. So I had one dream, and we were in the room where Prabhupada stayed in the Berkeley Temple, and Prabhupada was sitting behind a low table there, and we were just finishing. I was sitting there with Prabhupada, helping him to go over this kind of work, like the accounting work, and getting these documents ready, and this and that. And it was just very, very nice, very natural for me, you know. And I was sitting back in my mind thinking, well, Prabhupada likes this very much. He's very happy doing this kind of work in my service. But, you know, the service of other devotees who are out in the street approaching people, you know, like that and stuff, is he probably likes that more intensely, you know. So we can appreciate Prabhupada is from a Brahmanical sense. We can appreciate him from a sannyas or a paramatma sense. Or we can appreciate him from the sense of being representative of Bhagavan. And then within Bhagavan, you know, then we have Sriman Narayan, Jehovah. What else going on there? Yeah, and then Krishna in Dwarka, you know, Krishna in Vrindavan. I see myself too many times. I like to read the pastimes in Dwarka. I'm more stimulated by those than the pastimes in Vrindavan. And I realize that to be stimulated, my body to be stimulated by the pastimes in Vrindavan, I have to purify my senses more. And of course, when you get out on the ocean, you smell the fragrance of the sea. These are very purifying, pantheistic things. But then, and if we go on like that, how much can we purify our senses? You know, yeah. I think this described that we can be engaged. We can stimulate our bodies to the point of aprakrita bhava. You know, we can engage, develop them, surcharged with you know, transcendental little ecstasy. So it seems that we can actually develop a body which will, you know, be sensitive enough to stimulate us in Goloka, you know, consciousness, where everything is very simple. And there's no manifest gross opulence like that. You know, there's no golden ornaments or golden pearl collars so much, but everything's made of flowers. You know, armlets for the flowers, bracelets for made of flowers, and cottages, you know, not made of golden filigree and marble, and onyx, and coral columns, you know, but rather just constructed out of flowers in the forest like that, forest cottages. And then where are they sitting? They take very big stones, nice smooth stones, and govardhan, which are maybe fragrant stones, and then the gopis cover them with their chadars, and Radha and Krishna make a nice sitting place for them, you know. So how to appreciate these things and identify, you know, Srila Prabhupada. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, he's in the Encyclopedia Britannica. You know, so how many people make that? How many people get into the Encyclopedia Britannica? You know? And and it's interesting because, for example, you take Immanuel Kant. Some people say the greatest philosopher in Western history. You know? But then it will start going into his history, and like, what did he do? Or Shakespeare. You know? So at what point did Shakespeare become a historical person? Yeah. And maybe a little bit of mention by his contemporaries, maybe 20 years after his death, you know, 40 years after his death. You know. But then, as time goes on and his works had influence, then his biography began to grow. His public biography, what people wanted to know about him, began to grow. So then I have a suspicion that if we go on, trying to appreciate who Srila Prabhupada really is, you know, then his Britannica biography is going to grow, you know. Like the information is there, the source materials are there, very good source materials, biographical source materials, Lilamrita, other people's remembrances. But as we go on, you know, and Prabhupada's influence continues, then his biography and his position in the Britannica will grow from maybe like half a page up to like maybe 20, 30 pages like that, and so on. You know? But how much will it grow? Okay, this is the material world. You know? And so people, they'll still, one devotee, he sends me clips on Twitter, like, you know, ethical, moral, wise sayings, and some devotional ones also. And one of them, it says, very nice, it says, you can't save everybody. Some people are determined to kill themselves. So that is just a fact. And if we try to do that, if we try to become everybody's dearmost friend, you know, then we'll kill ourselves too. You know, we're not like that. So some people will never, you know, appreciate Prabhupada, and different people on different levels, and trying to become fortunate ourselves in appreciating Prabhupada. You know, and then of course Lord Chaitanya through him. You know, what can we ever? What do we see when we see Srila Prabhupada? We see Lord Chaitanya. Like that, yeah, manifest in a practical form. Let's go next slide here. Okay. Oh, isn't that nice? 13. When I read this, I was thinking of Marshall McLuhan. You maybe know him. He was a big a professor of the history of media. He was in the front cover of Time magazine and all this kind of stuff. And he had a lot of influence on everybody, I think, in creating a little bit higher consciousness. So what I remember, one of his citations in his books, he said, no one knows who discovered water, but it probably wasn't a fish, like that. No one knows who discovered water, but probably it wasn't a fish. Yeah. So this is the thing. How do we get some perspective on things? How do we appreciate stuff? We need someone to come from the outside. We just need it. And so our work, we can't get out of our perspective. Our work is to be open to take these different perspectives when they come. Okay. Number 14, our last slide. So finishing off, actually what came to our mind was the Krishna book, chapter 23, delivering the wives of the brahmanas who performed sacrifice. You know? Of course, the idea is that Krishna and Balaram sent the cowherd boys to get a little food to eat, because Mother Yashoda's lunch didn't arrive somehow or other. And they think they even left early, so they're hungry. You know? So they, the brahmanas wouldn't give them anything, and then they went back and they asked the wives, and they brought all kinds of good food and had a little dialogue with Krishna. Yeah, and they went back. They appreciated it. You know? The gopis didn't go back, but the wives of the brahmanas went back. After the return of their wives from Krishna, the brahmanas engaged in the performance of sacrifices. The brahmanas engaged in the performance of sacrifices began to regret their sinful activities in refusing food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They could finally understand their mistake, engaged in the performance of Vedic rituals. They had neglected the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So is that how we're chanting our japa? Are we chanting our japa as a Vedic ritual and neglecting Krishna? Yeah. Who had appeared just like an ordinary human being and asked for some food. So is that our japa beads? Appearing like ordinary wooden beads and asking for a little food? In terms of being squeezed and chanted, they began to condemn themselves after seeing the faith and devotion of their wives. Clickety-click. They regretted very much that their wives were elevated to the platform. What's this, slide number 15? Slide 15. Although their wives were elevated to the platform of pure devotional service, they themselves cannot understand even a bit, a little bit, of how to love and offer transcendental loving service to the Supreme Soul. So again, these are not ordinary people. These are very nice people, these Brahmanas. I think it describes they were all situated down one place. They, you know, built maybe some nice cottages and stuff, and they were doing these sacrifices on a prolonged basis. You know, some very nice yoga community. They began to talk amongst themselves, these Brahmanas. They said, "To hell with our being born, Brahmanas. To hell with our learning all the Vedic literature. To hell with our performing great sacrifices and observing all the rules and regulations." Oh, there's one more here. "To hell with our families. To hell with our expert service in performing the rituals exactly according to the descriptions of the scriptures. To hell with it all." That's very nice. "To hell with it all." Oh, we got how many? We got 1, 2, 3. I missed one. 4, 5, 6. They got 6 to hells with it. "For we," some of us have liked writing this. For we have not developed transcendental loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the speculation of mind, body, and senses." Okay. So I guess we all, it's the whole thing, you know, "To hell with all the things I've accomplished in my religious life. I have become GBC, sannyasi, guru, PhD. Okay. You know, my disciples won the marathon. Okay. But, you know, have we developed love, transcendental loving service?" Yeah. Well, next slide here in my vituperation. I'm going to click it here, the vituperative. Okay, yeah, there it is. Okay, slide number 16.18. "Because he has appeared as a child in the Yadu dynasty, we were so foolish." Hey, how did they know he was a child in the Yadu dynasty? Oh, because he's the son of Vasudev? No, he's the son of Nanda Maharaj. Hey, wait a second. Did the Garga Muni give them a little secret information here? "Because he appeared as a child in the Yadu, in the dynasty of Yadus," well, I guess Nanda Maharaj, he was also, I guess he's also Yadu, isn't he? And he's half, he's a son of a Vaishya. Yeah, I guess he and Vasudeva are cousins. They're both sons of Maharaj Ugrasen, and by a Vaishya wife. Okay, so maybe he has appeared in the Yadu dynasty, direct both ways. "We were so foolish that we cannot understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead," the Brahmanas said. "But, on the other hand, we are very proud because we have such exalted wives who have developed pure transcendental service of the Lord without being rigidly shackled by our rigid opposition." Very interesting, very subtle, huh? These guys aren't gross. They're nice people, subtle people, nice people, maybe like us. And they're happy when their subordinates, their good sweet little wives, are actually just, you know, what we call rebelling against the rigid opposition of their fathers and their husbands. So we have a nice picture, if you can see it here. We found one Brahmana, a Vedic Brahmin, you know, very proud of his puja and his austerity. Okay, and number 17, "The Brahmanas repented their sinful activities. They wanted to go personally to offer obeisances unto him," Krishna, "but being afraid of Kankra, they could not go to Krishna and surrender unto him." So it's kind of like our final point here. Okay, we want to advance. We want to become spontaneous lovers of the master of the gopis, Sri Krishna. You know? But how do you do it? You know? So Sukadeva Goswami says, you know, the cowherd boys were playing with Krishna after accumulating heaps of pious activities. You know, Yesham, we have Bhagavad Gita 7:28. "Yesham tvanta gatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam drida vrataha." Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose simple actions are completely eradicated, you know, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination, drida vrataha. You know? So that's what I understand is what we're trying to do is that, you know, by offering our obeisances to Krishna, the deity, by chanting our rounds, especially engaging in Harinam, engaging in kirtan, trying to help Srila Prabhupada and his potent sankirtan by being an ISKCON, but trying to fight, you know, different contaminations and problems within ISKCON. The Shamtaka jewel was like a whole murder story of, you know, people under the jurisdiction of Dwarka. You know, was it Satadanva and Satrajit, all these people. So there's so much internal struggle to, you know, to serve ISKCON, you know, internally, and then they do it. So, but by these activities, punya karmana, we're developing these pious activities. Three kinds of pious activities. Pious activities for sense gratification in this life and the next life we go to the moon. And then pious activities for liberation. And finally, pious activities to advance in devotional service. So whatever we can do, you know, that's what we're trying to do. And then maybe next lifetime, we'll, you know, myself, I'll be able to take birth in Navadvip, something like that. I'll be a monkey, you know, a Bengali monkey. And, you know, these big guys, Hanuman monkey, and start to appreciate Lord Chaitanya's movement and so on, which, of course, is related with Krishna's movement. Lord Chaitanya wants to go to Vrindavan, you know, so on. So that's our presentation here. You misspelled punya karmanam. And thank you very much, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, and a little advertisement for our webpage, jayarama.us. So, any comments, questions, complaints, donations, all glories to the Prabhupada.
Donations are just now coming.
Are we unmuted?
Yeah.
Yes, Bob. We can hear
you. So I was just thinking, particularly in the beginning of the class, and really you followed the thread all the way through in the class about how the Yadus, or many, with the exception of very few, could actually understand Krishna as he was when he appeared. And you know, sometimes a question may cross our mind, well, geez, what if Krishna walked in now? What will we see? And I think the answer is that he's already here, and it's obvious we're not seeing him because he's fully in his holy name. Yeah. I mean, that is it. That is his incarnation of the age and the deity.
Yeah.
And the Bhagavatam, in so many forms, you know, Krishna's here. The question was asked, where are religious principles residing now that Krishna's left the planet? And he is there, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. He is there personally in the Bhagavatam, and particularly the holy name. And, you know, to whatever degree we are advancing in spiritual life, to that degree we are realizing Krishna. In fact, there's the verse of Rupa Goswami, Atak Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhavi Grayam Indriyai, Sevan Mukahi Jiva Dao Svayameva Spiratha, that we'll realize Krishna first through the tongue, through tasting prasad, and then primarily through the chanting of the holy name. So I think that kind of proves it, that we wouldn't see him either. There's no difference between Krishna's holy name and Krishna walking in here. So we have a lot of work
to do. To some degree, we're appreciating him, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely, some degree. As I was saying, yeyatangmang prapajante tangzitabhijamyaham, in proportion to our surrender, to that degree, we're realizing Krishna. And if we weren't realizing Krishna to some degree, we wouldn't be here at this Bhagavatam class every day with great enthusiasm to hear Shabda Brahma.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no question about it. We're definitely realizing to some degree, or after 40-some years, we'd have been long gone.
Maybe your next lifetime you'll be able to ferry Krishna back and forth to Dwarka when he's coming and going.
I would love to do that.
Love
to sail. Yeah.
Take the gopis and Krishna out on a few pleasure trips to.
Well, I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist. I'm hoping that if we stay very firmly fixed at following Prabhupada's instructions to the best of our ability, chanting our 16 rounds every day, hearing the Bhagavatam, taking association with the devotees, worshiping the deity, the angas of spiritual life. I have faith that if we all do that in earnest, at the end of this life, we're going back to Krishna. Prabhupada said it enough times.
He also said usually what happens is you take birth, you know, directly in the association of Krishna wherever he is, right? Which is what's the difference, you know? You take birth.
Yeah, that's the same deal. Yeah. That's fine with me.
Yeah.
A little further training, great.
That's it, you know. Yeah. Wow.
But I also heard one time Prabhupada said that the pujaris, they go directly back to Krishna.
Ah, okay. Wow. These chapters here, it's kind of like the sages, they asked for something higher, you know, the Dwarka thing rather than Krishna manifesting himself to Brahma. And that's what they're getting. You know, right away, Vidura makes the stimulation, lights the fire, and then Uddhava is blazing in these chapters. And so these two chapters, Krishna Vrindavan and Krishna outside about Vrindavan, they make a fantastic little Krishna book, you know, just like that. It's wonderful, like for a kid's drama or something. Boop, you know, just right away you get a little the Krishna Leela for Janmashtami. Make a fantastic little children's drama just to act out these things while they're being recited and mixing in the Sanskrit musically. You know, so much opportunity, you know, what Prabhupada gave us like that.
A question, if following the discussion, it says that we're realizing Krishna to some degree. What would it look like if you realized Krishna to the full degree, that Krishna is there in his holy name, that Krishna is there in the Bhagavatam? What would it seem like then?
Then Krishna would increase himself even more.
Excuse me?
If you realize Krishna, quote-unquote, fully, then Krishna would expand himself, and you realize that you aren't realizing him fully, and you have to expand yourself. Krishna would introduce a new dance step, like into the which nobody ever seen before. And oh my goodness, you know, yeah. And you know, to us, the Lord Chaitanya, right? His explanation: the highest manifestation realization of Krishna is the consciousness of the gopis, you know, and of course them Radharani, you know. But that's expanding, right? You know, Krishna is always upping the ante. He wants to enjoy more. And the gopis are coming up with stuff that Krishna didn't even think about. You know, 32 flavors of ice cream.
Well, it seems individually, the more one realizes Krishna, the least he feels that he has realized Krishna. And then when he sees other people, he thinks, well, they must have, they're so much more advanced than me. Just look what they're doing. So it seems like it gets kind of confusing.
That wasn't the purport, no? Prabhupada was saying that a pure devotee is always feeling the separation from full realization. But it's like a dynamic mixture. Like, you know, you go down the California seacoast, you know that, right? And these beautiful rocky cliffs and seagulls and the waves coming in, going out. And the waves that are going out are hitting the waves that are coming in sometimes, and there are tide pools up on the rocks. And so it's like that. It's a fully, you know, dynamic mixture of separation, meeting, and then Rupa Goswami, Nectar of Devotion, he starts describing all the kinds of meeting, you know, and stuff like that, gives some kind of analytical description of it, you know. But as soon as we realize Krishna, I would say also the other side too is that we realize, wow, the devotees has developed so much. Then when we look around, we realize, but nobody's realized this. Nobody's doing this. I mean, I'm the only guy who knows this. And I guess so. So I better put my 2 cents worth in here, or else the whole show is going to go to hell, you know. So sometimes we also realize that, yeah, we really do have figured something out which nobody else has figured out. You know?
It did mention that Krishna was pleased with Brahma's ingenuity.
Ah.
So you are kind of, Krishna does take that intrigue in how he watches what you do with the clues he gives you.
Yeah. And Brahma's an engineer, too. And he's an ingenious engineer. You see all the, he's very consistent, you know. All the prayers by Brahma I see in the Bhagavatam have the same kind of consistency to them, and stuff. Yeah. And then when it comes to Brahma describing the Bhagavatam to Narada in the first canto, all of a sudden it goes into all these details, you know, about how the thing's constructed, what came first, where the screw goes, and how that, you know, is interesting. Engineers can also become devotees.
Maharaj, I really appreciated your description of the cargo ship that is so incredibly powerful.
Well, that's Prabhupada's story, yeah. Yeah.
That was where was that? That was in a conversation?
It was a morning walk, something like that. It seemed like we walk on the beach, and I kinda remember it like Long Beach or something. You know, but I don't know where it was or where I heard it. You know?
I've never heard it before, but it really I got a lot out of it.
I mean it's the whole thing. There's some things that just aren't recorded. And like you say, stories and stuff like that. And, you know, when Prabhupada was in the room in Berkeley and stuff, I don't think the recorder was on. And he told the story about, you know, the guy I mentioned before, the guy with the country beer. Yeah. Well, I guess, thank you all.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Oh, Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Thank you so much for giving class. That was, it was just, you know, really good. But I wanted to say one thing and ask two questions. About the cow urine.
Oh, yeah.
I've known people that have tried to drink a lot of cow urine at a time.
Oh, God.
And that's not good advice. I would suggest starting out with just an ounce, not a big glass of cow urine.
Oh, God.
Because that was maybe a little unclear. And it is
very
salty.
we were one time we were on the farm. It was going to some devotees had a little farm area, you know, and we were there with Jayananda. I think we were picking apples or something, and had a little recreation, all the devotees and stuff, you know. And a cow was there, and it was a bull. A cow was urinating, and Jayananda just stuck his hand right under my cow and just took a big handful and was drinking it. And everyone was just like, you know, eyes popping out, shocked. What are you doing, you know? He looked like a little surprised. He said, oh, no, it's good for your liver, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I knew someone that stuck their head in the stream of cow urine and then licked their lips.
Oh, God.
More than once.
Are you there?
So my two questions. What is Srila Prabhupada's entry in the Encyclopedia Britannica? How is he listed?
A.C. Bhaktivedanta.
So in the A's or the B's?
I think it's under A. But you just put it in. You just put it into the search thing on the... You go online, right?
Well, some people use books.
Okay. Actually, the Britannica they announced there's no more books coming out. Whatever it was in the last set. So if you got the last set, hang on to it because then your grandchildren are going to be able to sell it for $1 million. You know.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know if he's in that copy. That was about 1990s, I think maybe was the last copy, like 1997 or something. So I don't know if he's in the paper copy. Lord Chaitanya is in the section on on Indian philosophy. There's a separate section on India philosophy of separate from the whole. You know, one of the few things separate. You know, few countries has it. I guess thing. But he's mentioned there is like, you know, Bhakti Vedanta mentioned. But in the current Britannica online, yeah. Then there's AC Bhakti Vedanta, and it shows up with Prabhupada's biography like that.
Okay,
it's only 50 bucks a year. They give you something, but for 50 bucks. And it's actually very interesting because it's a good example of academic preaching, communication. They really develop their thing. They have a really, really good, strong children's section where children can go on and find information about things and stuff like that. So, and they have a very strong thing for advocacy for animals. So it's very nice organization. I put a link at the bottom of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata section to the BBT, Vedabase.com thing there, and it stayed up for a little while. And somebody, one of their monitors, took down the one I think for the Mahabharata, you know. But I think maybe the Ramayana one is still there. So, preaching in the library world.
Yeah, well, they still make the children's one. I've seen it in the library. But then my other question is there a reference for that statement, Pujaris go directly back to Krishna?
If you're asking me, I've heard it several times, and I apologize. I do not have an exact reference.
Okay.
I don't have a reference. Just that I've heard it many times.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, it sounds good.
I haven't heard that, but I've heard the Prabhupada said the Pujari is most fortunate because he's always with Krishna. And I've also heard the Prabhupada said that the two people most likely to fall down are the Pujari and direct servant of the spiritual master.
We've sure seen it with Prabhupada's servants.
Familiarity can breed contempt or minimization, like the Yadus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I guess we'll go ahead here. It's 12
thank
o'clock
you,
here
Maharaj.
For our Sunday.
Thank you, Maharaj. Lovely.
And thank all of you. You get inspired to do these. And the PowerPoint shows, they take time, but it's fun to do them. And it feels satisfied, like it's something, and it came out nice like that. Okay, so thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. See you in a week.
Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.